Welcome to Talking About Books for Kids. I'm your host, Jackie Duche, and we have another great show for you today. So let's get started. Welcome to another episode of Talking About Books for Kids. I think you're going to really love this episode. We have, as our special guest, Greg Millman. He's a TV writer who's written for kids, teens, and tweens, and he's taken his love of kid fiction to use it for his new novel, The Candy Kingdom Saga. So you'll hear a little bit about the book, and you'll also hear about his writing process and how he took his writing career as a TV writer and how that influenced his writing kids' novels. So let's get started. How are you doing, Greg?
Excellent. Very excited to be here.
Excited to have you today. So, Greg, if you could tell our listeners a little bit about your background as a writer and how you began your journey writing children's books.
Sure. I would love to. It's a bit of a long and twisting path to writing kids' books, and I definitely never thought I'd be an author of any kind. So a few years after college, I ended up living back at home with my parents in New Jersey, and I randomly applied for an internship at CNBC, the business branch of MSNBC and NBC, and I got hired to be an intern for Geraldo Rivera, who is a bit of a TV legend, kind of a crazy personality. He had a trashy daytime talk show, but this was his legal show on CNBC, and he really liked the cookies that I would buy for him. That was my main duty as an intern. And so, yeah, and so that went well, and they offered me a paid job after my internship. And so I kind of worked my way up at CNBC and MSNBC to writing news and producing news. And, yeah, and so I sort of ended up becoming a professional writer randomly just because I wandered into it. And so while I was writing news, at the time I had a friend who, out of the blue, insisted that I had to write a screenplay with him. And I had no idea what a screenplay even was. And like all beginners, we read a bunch of how-to books. You know, how do you format a screenplay? And so for no particular reason, we wrote a movie together. And it was a lot of fun. We were writing as a team and making each other laugh and dreaming of becoming professional screenwriters in Hollywood. And, you know, we were in New Jersey and New York, and we wrote a lot of screenplays and would send them to producers and enter competitions, but it's really hard to sort of break in if you're not actually in Los Angeles. And so we really weren't getting anywhere, so we decided we were both going to move to Los Angeles, and we were young and foolish, and it seemed like a great idea at the time. And so I actually had one contact in Los Angeles when I moved out here, and it was Lawrence O'Donnell, who now hosts a talk show on MSNBC, a political talk show at night. And at the time, he was working at MSNBC, and he was also a writer on The West Wing, the Aaron Sorkin show about the presidency. It was a big hit on NBC, and I love the show. And so one night I randomly walked up to Lawrence and said, "Hey, I'm moving to Los Angeles. Can you get me a job on The West Wing?" And he kind of laughed, and he was very nice about it. And he handed me his business card, and he said, "Yeah, if you ever get to L.A., you know, look me up." So I held on to that business card. It's my one contact out here. And when I got here, I gave him a call, and coincidentally, he had just gotten a green light to film a TV series that he had written about a U.S. senator called Mr. Sterling. And the senator was played by Josh Brolin. And he needed an assistant. And so he was like, "You're hired." And I knew nothing about Hollywood. On my first day, I went to a casting session and I left my phone on and it rang while one of the actors was reading and, you know, very awkward. And so you learn about Hollywood. And Lawrence became my mentor, sort of teaching me how to write screenplays. And since I got a job on that TV show, I sort of bounced around from one TV show to another TV show. And I was a researcher and a writer's assistant. The writing staffs for TV shows can be large. They can be anywhere from, you know, 8 to 12 writers. And so there's an assistant who helps them with research and organizes the notes. And I did that on a bunch of shows. And some of them got canceled. And for whatever reason, I just kept going from one show to another. And along the way, you make connections and you get to meet writers, and then you beg them to read your screenplay and you beg them to pass it to their agent or manager. And so eventually I landed my own manager, and I finally sold my first script, which was a TV series to ABC Family, which is now called Freeform. And it was about a teen psychic, about a girl who has visions, and she tries to, figure out what's going to happen and kind of stop the crime before it happens. And I always loved teen movies. I grew up on like all the John Hughes movies. Breakfast Club is one of my all-time favorites. And so in Hollywood, you kind of get pigeonholed. Like if you sell one teen script, it's easier to sell another teen script. And so I just randomly became like the teen guy, the kids guy. And so from there, I ended up selling another movie to Nickelodeon. And then they actually made that one, and it became the movie called One Crazy Cruise, which aired in 2015. And then I did a bunch of other kind of teen things, like adapted a YA novel for Warner Brothers and a couple other teen projects. And so how did I finally start writing kid books? So after all those years of working as a screenwriter, I had tons of unsold pitches for TV shows and movies about teens and kids. And for every one idea that you're lucky enough to sell, you have 30 sitting in your drawer that never saw the light of day. And it could have just been an idea, or it could be a fully formed pitch with characters and everything worked out. And so I also have two kids now, a 4-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son. And I read with them all the time. And my son loves, novels for 8 to 12-year-olds. And so we read every night, all sorts of things by books like Nerds by Michael Buckley, and a lot of grounded stuff too, like Diary of a Wimpy Kid. He's read each of those probably 50 times. Things like the Origami Yoda series, and now we're reading the Timmy Failure books, which are pretty great. And so reading all these kids' books, I sort of realized, hey, you know what? Some of my unsold TV ideas might actually make a book series for kids. And so I kind of went through all my, old ideas and sort of landed on the one that became the Candy Kingdom saga, and decided I'm just going to write this. It was actually my New Year's resolution. So I started writing on January 1st, and then 6 months later, almost to the day, I published it. And
Wow,
that's
that's a great background, and
yeah.
story, I
So
think, to write children's books.
yeah, it's just a long path that I didn't expect to end up here, but I love reading kids' books, and now I love trying to write them as well.
Awesome that you were able to marry the things that you like to do. So before, before we even booked the interview, you shared that your son sort of plays a role in your writing process. So I was just wondering if you could share a little bit about how do you how did how does that writing process differ for you writing a children's book versus, let's say, your prior work in writing screenplays. I think it would be great to know.
So, my writing process in general, if I'm writing a screenplay for TV or movies or now a book, I like to mix fantasy and things that are sort of grounded in reality. So, if I'm going to write an adventure about a magical world of candy, the characters, the kids, are still going to be dealing with, problems and issues that real kids might deal with. So, sometimes my process is just thinking up crazy, fantastical, what would be the most amazing thing that you could imagine seeing? And then part of my process, I'm trying to think, like from my own childhood, what's something real that happened to me that I can draw on, or something that happens to my son. And so as I was writing this novel, every night I ended up talking to my son, Hugh, during bath time, and I would sort of update him on, okay, well, this is what I worked on today, and what do you think of this idea? And then he would start pitching me other ideas. And this had never happened when I was writing screenplays for whatever reason, but because this was a kid's book, he was very interested. And so he would say, oh, well, what if you did this instead of that? And so every night it became sort of a working session at bath time. And we would talk about the story and come up with characters. And my wife would be yelling at me, like, stop working your son to death, let him take his bath. And yeah, so it sort of became this collaboration with Hugh. And then also, what I realized was like in real time, it was sort of like seeing how my target demo would react, you know, like a mini focus group at home, like what sort of things did he like or not like. And yeah, and just became a fun sort of activity that we did together.
So, the Candy Kingdom Saga is your first children's novel. Can you share a little bit about give a little teaser
Sure.
for your new novel?
Yeah. So the Candy Kingdom Saga, book the first, the sweetest one, is about two seventh graders, Cassie and Landon, a girl and a boy. They're best friends and also polar opposites. So she's the kind who rushes into things without thinking, and he's very neurotic and overthinks everything. And together they get transported to a magical world of candy that's full of candy creatures like talking chocolate Easter bunnies and wild monsters like chocodiles that, you know, looks like a crocodile that's made of chocolate. And so in Candy Kingdom, there's sort of a war going on between two sides. There's the good guy sweet treats, and then there's the evil sour powers. And Cassie and Landon try to help the sweet treats win and bring peace to the Candy Kingdom. And then the other thing that I like about the book is, unlike some fantasy adventures where, you know, you just sort of go to that magical world and you're there for the whole time, I thought it'd be fun if they kept bouncing back and forth between our world and the candy world. So they have a candy ring that they can lick to go back and forth. So they might have a small adventure in Candyland, and then they're like, oh, we better get home because our parents are going to realize we've been gone. So they lick the ring and then they come back here. So they're kind of going back and forth the whole time.
So as I read the premise of the book, I was just wondering if love of candy or your son's love of candy at all influenced the book. Like I'm just
Oh,
like
God.
how did you even come to like set the story amongst candy?
Yeah, of course. Well, I love candy probably too much. And I think everybody in my house loves candy. Yeah, it was just one of those things that's sort of always been in my head. Growing up, one of my favorite movies was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which was also a book, but I saw the movie. And this was the original with Gene Wilder, not the recent remake with Johnny Depp. And yeah, it just sort of imprinted on my young brain, you know, these kids win the chance to go to the candy factory, and it's this amazing world. And it's also kind of, the original is kind of creepy and weird. There's the, you know, the Oompa Loompas, those little creatures singing songs, and it's just a very strange movie. And it also has this balance between fantasy and being grounded, because the main kid, Charlie, he's actually pretty poor. Something I remember vividly, and they really show you how poor he is, and so he's really lucky when he wins this chance to visit the candy factory. So that was one thing. And then, of course, like everybody, I played the Candyland board game as a kid, and now I play it again with my two kids. And then there's other things, you know, like the Candy Crush game, and in Wreck-It Ralph, the movie, they go to a Sugar Rush is one of the lands they go to. It's sort of a candy racing video game. So all these sort of different worlds of candy have always fascinated me. And then the thing I thought would be fun is, usually because it's candy, it's sort of a sweet world, you know, sort of a gentle world. And I thought, what if you went to the candy world and then it was like Lord of the Rings, or, you know, there was like a big battle going on and the candy creatures might actually die in a battle, you know? So having stakes to it, I thought, could be a fun twist on what you would expect to just be like, you know, a sweet world of candy.
I think sometimes that's real too, because I know growing up candy, well, one, you mentioned the Willy Wonka and those Oompa Loompas, they scared me. I had nightmares
Right,
of
right.
those
There's that
Oompa
scene where they go through the tunnel, I
Loompas.
think, and it's kind of trippy and weird. Yeah, very scary.
And I mean, and I like candy. I love candy too, but I think it's true, right? Because it depends on the type of candy, right? There's the good and bad candy, depending on what type of candy you like. And I think sometimes
Right.
even as a parent, it's like a battle for your kids, like, oh, gotta take the candy, especially the Halloween candy. So
Yeah,
yeah, candy
there's
is
that. Yeah, that thing where they, on Halloween, they you trade candy for a toy. That never happened when I was growing up, but that's a new thing that parents do.
oh well I did I have older kids, but I never traded the toys. Unfortunately,
I I think it's crazy. I know. So it's a new thing that I forget what the deal is called. There's some name to it, but they agree to give you like 3/4 of their Halloween candy so they don't eat it all. In exchange, they get a toy. And I'm like, why did you let them go trick or treating if you don't want them eating candy?
I agree, and it's a great bounty for parents. Like, I love Snickers, so unfortunately, I would take the Snickers. But
Exactly. You have to be very subtle about, taking it from their bag without them realizing.
yeah, and it's
It
sugary.
was
Because I'm wondering if, down the line in the series, there'll be some dentists
some
that have
dentist. I think I should do that. Yeah. You don't see that coming, but maybe in the second or third book.
maybe the
That'd be funny.
dentist, can come into battle or something. Because I love
Yeah. And then there could be maybe something with a tooth fairy because it's a fantasy world. That could be fun. I'm making a note about that
it. No problem. Because the one thing that always fascinates me is for writers who've had a career writing television or movies, and then also writing actual books. How does that? I mean, you shared a little bit about your process, but I'm just wondering, like visually, right? Sometimes I'm liking, an illustrator, an illustrator author, right? To be able to actually paint a picture and then put the words that to match the picture, or vice versa, right? The words then to the picture. So I'm just wondering, in your mind, as you're working through the book, how do you see it? I mean, are you actually seeing it as a movie or as a TV show? I mean, I just wonder if that ever comes into play while you're writing.
Yeah, no, of course. I think writing for movies and TV are it's definitely, as people say, a visual medium, and it's harder to get inside a character unless there's a voiceover or a character tells you how you're feeling. Whereas in novels, you can sort of be very interior inside a character's mind. So, yeah, I think writing for movies and TV, you sort of depend on the visuals and things that are visually interesting. So that might help if you're writing a kid's book that has a fantasy world in it, for sure. And then I think two of the things that are useful, if you write movies or TV, sort of professionally, structure becomes very important. So, movies have like a three-act structure, and you read all the books, and they say, act one, you set up the problem. Act two, the main character tries but fails to solve the problem. And then act three, the character finally solves the problem, or if it's a tragedy, they don't solve the problem. And then TV shows, they have their own structure with different, they have like 5 to 7 acts, and at each act break right before a commercial, there's a cliffhanger or sort of a big plot point. And so I think that's useful when you start writing a novel to have sort of a sense of the structure to hang your story on so you don't get lost along the way. And then also, I think in movies and TVs, another thing people stress a lot when you're learning to write it is like having a character arc, which is, a character has a flaw in the beginning of the story, and then by the end of the movie, they somehow overcome their flaw or, confront their flaw in some way. And so those two sort of structural things I think are useful, even though books are very different than screenplays. So those are two things I sort of naturally relied on when I started doing the book. But like you mentioned earlier, it's also very different in some ways, writing a novel versus writing a TV show or a movie. And TV shows particularly are very collaborative. Like on TV shows, there's a writer's room, and some, depending on the TV shows, they could have anywhere from 5 to 15 writers. These writing staffs can be big, and everybody sits in a room together and they brainstorm ideas, and you put up ideas on a whiteboard, and so it's everybody kind of works together, and then people go off and write their scripts on their own, and then you come back to the group and everybody reads it and gives you feedback. So there's that. And then also with movies and TV shows, you work with the executives, at the network that's airing the show or the studio that's making the show. They read all your scripts and then they give you their feedback, which are called notes, and you have to figure out how am I going to address their notes, maybe if I don't agree with them. And so writing a novel is totally different in the sense that, you're on your own. There's no writing staff, there's no executives telling you what, they think you should do. So I kind of like the change from this very collaborative, interactive process to working a bit more on my own, which means it's up to you. You know, there's more freedom, more independence.
And so I guess my follow-up question, and I think that to me that's really important to hear, because again, it's because I think it's always great to, like you said, you know, kind of get a little bit deeper into the process, how each author does reflections and uses their experience to infuse their writing. But I was, as you were talking, I was wondering, was fantasy, you know, you may enjoy fantasy, but I was just wondering, is fantasy also a choice for the novel, a genre for the novel, because of, I think, the complexity of fantasies, right? I think they're typically, you know, fantasies that I've read, it's not, like you said, there's the story arc, but there's a lot of things going on in fantasy, and you have to create this world. And does that film writing for television, does that help when writing a fantasy novel?
I think they, for me particularly, and I joked about it with some of my fellow writers who ended up doing similar things. Well, when you're pitching a TV show or a movie, you know, you're trying to stand out from the pack. And though, even though when you go to the movies, you know, everything now is a sequel or a spinoff or based on an existing superhero. But when you're trying to sell your own stuff, obviously you're trying to be original and unique and stand out from everybody. And so I sort of, not intentionally, but fell into this, like you're saying, this pattern of creating these fantasy worlds. So it could be a sci-fi thing, you know, a post-apocalyptic thing where, you know, there was a big disaster and now everybody has to survive. Or, you know, I wrote this thing about a teen psychic who has sort of magical powers. And so I ended up pitching and always creating the, you know, they call it worlds. So it's, what are the rules of your world? And if you're in a fantasy world, you know, how do you create it and populate it with characters so it feels real? And then once you create the rules, you sort of have to stick to the rules. And so that happens a lot when you're pitching and writing TV shows and movie. You might create something magical, and then the executives who are hearing the idea and deciding if they want to buy it, they start to try to pick it apart. And so they'll be like, well, you said you only got to the magical world by doing XYZ, but this character got there by, you know, doing this other thing. And so you sort of become, you develop skills for trying to create these coherent, consistent worlds that are weird and fantastical, but somehow make sense and won't confuse people. You know, so it's a weird balancing act between trying to create something very bizarre, but also it's somehow relatable and makes sense. And yeah, so I think doing it for TV show and movies where you're up against trying to sell it to executives and they're sort of looking for reasons to say no. That's sort of the joke in Hollywood is they're always just, they can't buy everything, and so they almost need a reason to say no to you. And so you have to be very, you know, thorough and make sure that your world makes sense if you're creating a fantasy world. And it's actually a lot harder. You know, some people end up just writing, you know, a cop show, you know what I mean, or something more grounded, and they have other challenges, but they don't have to create the rules of their world. So for whatever reason, I was drawn to that sort of fantasy creating. Yeah.
But it does sound like the structure from your day job does help provide some the tools and resources for you to even engage in, like you said, creating the rules for fantasy. Because I couldn't even begin, at least not right now, begin to think about, oh, you know, they're in this world, and then you have to, yeah, I would forget, and I'm just trying to figure out like how many notes you have to have. It takes to me
Yeah.
it seems like it would take a lot of structure and organization to put
Yeah.
that together.
Definitely. That's another thing you sort of learn, especially writing for TV shows, but I think also people who write for movies is being very organized with your notes and your outlines. And that's another thing that transferred is when you are lucky enough to sell something to a, you know, a studio, a movie studio or a TV network, before you write the actual screenplay, they make you write an outline. You know, so a half hour, a sitcom might be a half hour, and that's maybe 30 pages, and a hour drama could be 60 pages for an hour, and a movie could be 120 pages. And no matter how long it is, they make you do about a 10-page outline. where, they want you to describe pretty much every scene, and they call it beat for beat. And so you can't really move on to the next stage of actually writing the screenplay until everybody agrees that the story outline makes sense. So naturally, when I started to write the novel, I just, had an outline that I had created for the pitch, and then I sort of expanded it and kept, as you said, like trying to stay organized and figure out, if I create a rule here, make sure I follow that rule later. But yeah, there is definitely a lot of sort of organization, especially like you said, when you're creating a fantasy world.
So, what did your son think about the outline, and then ultimately the end result of your developing the Candy Kingdom saga? Was he a harsh
He
critic?
was, he, no, he was, he definitely, fought for the things he liked, and he would be honest and say, no, I don't like that. And, we would try to land on things that we both liked. And he pitched me so many great ideas that, like a couple of the ideas for what the sequels would be. And they're, I don't want to give it away, but at the end of the first book, they find a portal to another world that's similar to the candy world, but a little bit different. And so he came up with a couple of these ideas for, oh, after the first book, they could go here and then they could go here. So yeah, I think he was pretty excited to sort of see it come to life. I mean, he had obviously known I was a screenwriter for years, but I would go off to work or I would write in my office, and they were movies and TV shows mostly for adults, even if they were for teens. He was pretty young at that point, so I think he had no idea what I actually did. And so, yeah, I think he was very excited to sort of see the process and be a part of the process, and then see the book. And another fun thing about doing the book with him was we hired an illustrator to do the cover art, because, just obviously it helps selling the book wherever it is, online or paperback, to have great cover art. So I found a book cover artist, and so we went back and forth giving the artist notes, maybe the characters could look like this or look like that. And coincidentally, so the artist was in Great Britain, was in England, and I never sent him any photos of my son. And the boy he ended up drawing on the book cover is a spitting image of my son. I mean, it was very bizarre. And obviously that boy was sort of inspired by Hugh, but I never told the book artist how to draw him. And so that was one more thing that he was thrilled with. Obviously, it was that, like, it looks like him on the book cover. So yeah, I think he really enjoyed the process from the cover art to actually seeing the final, the finished book come to life.
Sounds great. I mean, it kind of go, hopefully that the reading that you do with the kids also kind of help spark his interest in reading and the excitement about the book as well, which I think is always awesome.
Yeah, we try to read with both our kids. And I think definitely my 4-year-old isn't reading on her own yet, obviously. But yeah, I think we managed to instill a love of books and reading with Hugh. So I'm pretty excited about that. And not just obviously novels are great, but also he's actually at a science school, so he reads about science and math and all these very technical things that I don't quite understand. Yeah, I think reading with kids is super important. And I don't know if most parents keep doing it, but because I'm a writer and I became very interested in these books for 8 to 12 year olds, I think I love the kids' novels as much as Hugh does. And so, yeah, so when we find like the first book in a series that we like, we immediately just start reading the next one. And it's pretty fun, I think, reading with your kids.
I agree. I agree. So what are the future plans for either the series or developing other stories?
So yeah, so the Candy Kingdom saga, I think is going to be 4 or 5 books in the series. I sort of have an idea of the overall arc and the different worlds they're going to go to. So yeah, so I would love to write this book series, and then I have a bunch of other, like I said, unsold movie or TV ideas that I think could also be good kids' books. I have one that's in the superhero genre, which is something I've always loved. So after I do this one, I think I may do something with superheroes. But yeah, I mean, they could end up becoming going back to being pitches for TV shows after becoming novels, or they may just as you know, novels on their own and a book series. So, yeah, I'm just gonna plan to keep writing and, you know, trying to get people interested in reading the books.
Sounds exciting. So if people want to learn more about the book, can you share where the book is available and how people can learn more about you and reach out?
Yeah, definitely. So I have a website at gregmillman.com. So it's GREGGMILLMAN.com. And on the homepage on my site, there's a link. You can buy the book on Amazon. And then there's also a link on the site to find out more about the book. And I put sort of additional content. Like right now, I put a map of the Candy Kingdom that I created. So there's sort of other content. And you can also sign up for a newsletter. Then I can email people updates about when the next book is coming. And also on the site, I have a little blog, which gets sent to all the different sites like Amazon and everything. And so I'm sort of writing the blog in character, as if I'm the official historian of the Candy Kingdom. And the king is very mad that this guy named Greg Millman is claiming that he made up the Candy Kingdom, because to them, the Candy Kingdom is a real place. And so, they're basically angry at me, and I'm wanted dead or alive in the Candy Kingdom for claiming it's all made up. So, there's fun little blog updates in character.
We might see you pop up in the book, you think, in the series.
Could be.
Greg
Actually,
Millman.
in the first draft of the book, there was a historian who each character in the book, each chapter is narrated by a different character. Sort of five or six characters take turns narrating the chapters, and so they're actually recording or telling what happened to the historian of Candy Kingdom. So there actually was a character that they would talk to, but it got too complicated. So I sort of just cut that character out. But now he resurfaced in the blog, and he's sort of taken over my blog. Yeah.
So it was great talking with you today, Greg. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jackie. It was a pleasure. I really
Pleasure.
appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talking About Books for Kids. As always, you can find this episode and other great episodes on Apple Podcasts. Please remember to rate, subscribe, and review, and tell a friend. Until next time.